Rapid Court of Appeals. We have two cases set this morning on our oral argument docket, and then we have several other cases that will be submitted on briefs. And if counsel is ready, we will have the clerk call the first case, which is Pogue versus Flores.
May it please the court, Mr. Marcus Marsden will argue for appellant, Ms. Amanda Bush will argue for appellee.
Counsel?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Marcus Marsden, and I represent the appellant, James Pogue, in this matter. I don't think that there's a huge dispute or argument with regards to the various elements of the law with regards to statute of limitations and the elements of suit to quiet title and reformation and such that was pled in plaintiff's original petition. I think what's important in this particular case are the facts, and they're somewhat over a long period of time and complicated a little bit, and the court has asked for a timeline, which each party's attempted to do that. So I want to go over the facts a little bit to bring to the court's attention what the appellant thinks are the important facts that the court needs to keep in mind as it considers this case, and three of them in particular. One is the condition, the financial condition of the estate. As I'll mention in a few minutes, and was set forth in the documents that were filed in the probate court, the estate of Mr. Flores had debts of over $16 million, and assets of only about $500,000. The other important factual point of emphasis is the lack of notice to the probate court of a separate mineral estate. And then lastly, as of today, I have never seen a deed, warranty deed or otherwise, mineral deed, transferring the minerals from Mr. Flores into Kathy Flores' name. There is no deed of record that's been shown or produced to the trial court other than the administrator's deed that transfers or severs or transfers these minerals into Ms. Flores' name, as she now contends she's the owner. So keep those three key factual points of emphasis in mind as we go through. As was set forth in both parties' briefs, Mr. Flores was involved in a development called Ranch Oaks Estates. It was a mobile home development. He transferred 50% of the minerals to a Gordon Swift back in 1984, when he at the same time transferred the 200 some odd acres to a joint venture. Approximately 3 years later, Mr. Swift deeded his 50 interest back to Mr. Flores. So at the time of his death in 1991, I don't think there's any dispute that Mr. Flores owned 100% of the minerals under not only the property that Mr. Pogue purchased, but other pieces of property. Like I said, Mr. Flores died in 1991. His will was probated a few months later, and his wife was appointed the dependent administrator of the will of the estate, and she was authorized to continue the operations of Mr. Flores. Like I indicated, the operations in the joint venture of Mr. Flores was not economically or business successful, with over $16 million in debt to various parties and very limited assets of less than $500,000. One of those creditors was Mike Ferguson, who was a trustee for a company called Anson Financial, who had gotten her via assignment, various assignments, a promissory note that Mr. Flores was liable on individually as a guarantor, and he subsequently sued Mr. Flores and the estate and received a judgment of over $1 million. That judgment is listed in the inventory and list of assets and claims that was filed in the probate court. In an effort to resolve that particular debt, Mike Ferguson and Anson Financial negotiated a settlement with the estate and Ms. Flores, where he actually paid money to the estate, and in return received four pieces of property and some promissory notes on some of those mobile home lots that were sold in the Ranch Oaks subdivision.
Is there any dispute that the estate at this point owned the mineral estate?
At that point, there was. I don't think there's any dispute because he had initially severed them, or at least 50% of them.
Came back.
And then they came back to him. So when he died in 91, I don't think there's any dispute that he owned the minerals. You know, why they were not listed in the inventory and appraisement list of claims, nobody seems to know. But they clearly were not. Pursuant to the settlement negotiations and the settlement agreement that was reached between the estate and Anson Financial, a contract was drawn up, and that was in January of 96, and an application was filed with the probate court asking for permission, basically, to consummate the contract with Anson Financial and transfer these assets that belonging to the estate to him. The application that was filed, the contract that was entered into by the estate or by Ms. Flores on behalf of the estate, and the order of the sale of real estate signed by the court never made any mention and did not mention that the real estate was surface only. When the administrator's deed was drawn up to transfer the real estate over to Anson Financial, and that deed was dated June 15th, 1996. It's there just above the legal description. It states surface only, which included four of those tracts, two of which included the tracts that Mr. Pogue purchased and that are at issue in this case. As a result of his negotiations with the estate and the fact that he was going to acquire these pieces of property, Anson Financial entered into a contract with Mr. Pogue, wherein Mr. Pogue was going to purchase two of these tracts of land, two of the four that he got. Keep in mind that Mr. Pogue and Mr. Ferguson both were keenly aware of the financial situation and testified as such in their depositions of the estate and the business operations of Mr. Flores. As Mr. Ferguson testified, it was his assumption that he was getting all the remaining assets of the estate. So the arrangement between Mr. Pogue and Anson Financial was that as soon as permission was granted from the probate court, then he would basically just flip those two tracts of land to Mr. Pogue, which they did, and they closed in, June of 2000, and, or no, I'm sorry, 1996. Thereafter, in August of 96, or somewhere in late or early fall of 96, Ms. Flores filed a first amended application to close the estate, and the probate court signed an order approving the first amended account for final settlement in August of 96, and at that time ordered that all the property that was remaining on hand after payment of the various debts and settlements and so forth be transferred or delivered to her. Notably, though, there was never any warranty deed or any type of general warranty deed, mineral deed, or anything transferring these minerals that they claim to now that belongs to them from the estate to Ms. Flores. And June 29th of 2005, Ms. Flores executed a mineral lease with Antero Resources, granting them the right to develop the mineral estate on not only the two properties that involve Mr. Pogue, but the other properties as well.
And if the mineral rights remained in the estate and the remainder of the estate that hadn't been utilized to settle claims was passed to Ms. Flores, why didn't the mineral estate go to Ms. Flores? What did I miss there?
Well, you didn't miss anything other than how would anybody know? There's got to be some type of constructive notice or something. How would anybody know that the minerals were transferred to her, because there's never any mention of the minerals in the inventory, in the application.
Was all property remaining on hand delineated? I'm reading from probate court signs an order approving First Amendment account for final settlement and orders that all remaining property on hand after payment of various settlements be delivered to Ms. Flores.
There was in her application or amended account for final settlement, she gives an account to the probate court of where everything's
and
gone.
It's not there.
And it's not there. It's not there. And if and it's not there because, you know, it never was anywhere. And the, you know, Ms. Flores claims that there was one document in the report when she reported to the court that she had sold the property to Anson Financial that she advised the court that, you know, there was a mineral estate. Well, I mean, all she did was provide a copy of the administrator's deed. And the administrator's deed, you know, says surface only. But other than that, there's not any other court document that I'm aware of or that we have seen that, you know, specifically identifies a mineral estate. And when you have, you know, $16 million in debt and $500,000 in assets, half of which she got as her community property, I don't think that the probate court or anybody was in a position to retain assets to the detriment of creditors. And had the creditors been notified that there were other assets out there, then other things could possibly have been done. When she signed the mineral lease agreement in June of 2005, it was just within about 6 months of that Mr. Pogue filed his first original petition, asserting various causes of action, reformation, and other causes of action, because of what he perceived as a cloud on his title to the minerals. The final judgment in the trial court does not specifically address whether it granted the motions for summary judgment based on statute of limitations or based on their other requests that some of the elements or a element of the various causes of action, there was insufficient or no summary judgment evidence to satisfy at least one element. So I want to briefly discuss and go over the statute of limitations issues for the various causes of action, and then I'll address briefly the actual causes of action and the fact that there's sufficient summary judgment evidence to show that the granting of the summary judgment was an error by the trial court. With regards to the statute of limitations, as a general rule, actions to quiet title are never time barred because the injury to the title is continuous, so that the four-year statute of limitations would basically start anew each day. So it's Pogue's contention that the summary judgment evidence shows that there is a cloud on his title with regards to the minerals, and that it's essentially anews or renews each day, so the statute of limitations on that particular cause of action has not run. On the reformation and slander of title causes of action, one is a four-year reformation, is a four-year statute of limitations, the other a two-year statute of limitations, but both of them apply the discovery rule. And it's Pogue's contention that the summary judgment evidence shows that there was really no way that he could have discovered or a reasonable person would have discovered the cloud on his title and the surface only in the administrator's deed until Ms. Pogue executed the mineral estate or the mineral lease in 2005.
Was there some subject to language
in
the deed to Pogue?
There was language in there that he takes it subject to any reservations.
Wouldn't that put you on notice that you may need to do a title search and see what reservations there are?
There was summary judgment evidence that when he closed on the, well, first of all, he knew the situation in the probate court. He had looked at, Anson Financial and Pogue both testified that they had looked at the probate documents and the financial condition of it. He got a title policy. It doesn't. It didn't. The administrator's deed didn't show up. And if you do a title search today, there's no deed from B.R. Flores or B.R. Flores' estate to Ms. Pope. So there's no way in all the other probate documents regarding the closing of the estate, the application for the sale of the property, none of those ever identify a separate mineral estate or identify that she's going to sell the property with a reservation of the minerals. So it's Mr. Pogue's contention that him or any other reasonable person would have never been able to discover the surface only in the administrator's deed.
Thank you.
I see my red light's up, my time's up. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, Amanda Bush with Jackson Walker, representing appellee cross-appellant Kathy McCorrick Flores. We prepared a timeline as well, and I won't go through the whole timeline. It's somewhat long. There are a few things on here that aren't on Mr. Marsden's timeline, and I wanted to quickly go over those. The two boxes that are in blue, I just want to point those out to the court. The reason that those are a different color is because those represent the surface estate only of three lots that Mr. Pogue had previously purchased from B.R. Flores. And so although they aren't related lots, related to the two lots that are at issue here, they're certainly relevant to show that Mr. Pogue had previously bought the surface estate only of three lots from B.R. Flores in the Ranch Oaks edition, the same edition that we're talking about here. And I think that goes to, again, constructive notice, the development scheme of the Ranch Oaks edition, and helps support the fact that this was the way that Mr. Flores sold the lots in the Ranch Oaks edition, and further supports the fact that he should have known prior to the mineral lease that Ms. Flores gave to the oil and gas company. I also want to respond to a few things that Mr. Marsden raised before getting into a couple of other arguments. As far as the condition of the estate, he says that Mr. Pogue was well aware of the condition of the estate. Well, if he was well aware of the condition of the estate and following all the probate documents, then that further supports that he should have been aware of the report of sale, which reported the surface estate only. He also should have been aware of the decree confirming the sale that the court entered, confirming the surface estate only. And he also would have been aware of the administrator's deed, which conveyed the surface estate only. And so if Mr. Pogue was clearly following the condition of the estate and the probate documents that were filed, he again should have been aware prior to 10 years after what the deed said, what the documents said that were filed with the court. As far as the deed from the fact that there is no deed from Mr. Flores to Ms. Flores, I think Justice McCoy said exactly right that there didn't need to be a deed. The administrator's deed reserved those minerals by saying service estate only. Those minerals then therefore went back to the estate or stayed with the estate. And then once the order confirming the first amended account, everything was said specifically, everything that remains on hand in the estate shall be delivered to Kathy McCormick Flores under the will. Those minerals then therefore transfer directly to Ms. Flores. There doesn't need to be a deed. As far as whether or not Mr. Pogue would have known about the transfer of the minerals without the deed, again, he could have looked back to the administrator's deed, all the probate documents that he said he was clearly aware of, and furthermore, the deeds that are exchanged between Mr. Pogue and Anson Financial also say that there are reservations.
What is it that they would have found in these documents that would mention the mineral estate?
In the report of sale, the report of sale to the court actually attached the administrator's administrative deed, and then attached to that is Exhibit A that outlines the tracks and says clearly at the top surface estate only. The same thing goes for the decree saying attached the administrative deed and then says the surface estate only. And in the warranty deed that Anson Financial gave to Pogue, as you mentioned earlier, it does say that it is given and accepted subject to any and all restrictions and reservations. The deed of trust says the same thing and is even more specific and says exceptions to conveyance and warranty including presently recorded restrictions, reservations, covenants, conditions, oil and gas leases, mineral severance. Again, Pogue had also purchased these three prior lots from Mr. Flores and knew that that is the way that the Ranch Oaks Edition lots were sold. Finally, he has constructive notice of the administrative deed and every other document in his chain of title. Even if it were the case that there is no deed transferring the minerals from Mr. Flores to Ms. Flores, and even if that were the case and the minerals are, I don't know, in some black hole somewhere, it doesn't mean that Mr. Pogue has the minerals. The administrative deed is very clear in saying that Anson Financial only got the surface estate only. And Mr. Ferguson testified he wasn't really sure what he got. He knew that he got whatever it was that he got in the administrative deed, and he then transferred to Mr. Pogue whatever it was that he got. He couldn't say he was supposed to get all of the assets or not. And so Mr. Pogue, at the end of the day, even if Ms. Flores doesn't have the minerals, Mr. Pogue doesn't. He only got what Mr. Ferguson got through Anson Financial, and Anson Financial only got the surface estate only, which is clearly spelled out in the administrative deed. With respect to the statute of limitations arguments, I went over the slander of title and reformation. We don't think that that 10 years going by is sufficient. We believe that the second that he got the warranty deed and deed of trust from Anson Financial, that he should have been on notice at that point of all of the deed records in his chain of title, of the deed records that he had with Mr. Ferguson, and then further knowing that he had previously purchased the same lots. With respect to the suit to quiet title, the general rule that Mr. Marsden is referring to doesn't apply where the deed is voidable as opposed to void. The suit to quiet title, or the general rule that statute of limitations don't apply to a suit to quiet title is because it is void. In other words, it was a nullity when it was initially entered. Doesn't apply in the case here where he is arguing that it wasn't so much void as of that day, but he's arguing that later on he has evidence that it shouldn't have conveyed everything that it conveyed, and therefore it's voidable under more of a reformation type theory. His suit to quiet title claim, he never contends that the deed was void. He claims that it was voidable. In that case, the courts have been very clear in saying that you cannot turn what would otherwise be a time-barred reformation claim into a suit to quiet title claim under an equitable theory, because the reformation claim is barred, so would a suit to quiet title claim on the exact same elements would also be barred.
You're saying that there were causes of action that existed that he could have asserted after the time that he received the title and he didn't. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that, I'm not sure, but
hence it was voidable because he had causes of action that he could have asserted.
Correct. He had an equitable remedy at law. Exactly. And cases basically say that if your claim is really for reformation, which is really what his is, it's not so much that there's a cloud on his title, and there's lots of arguments as to why that's not the case. He doesn't have possession, and there are other elements that I don't think go to a suit to quiet title claim here, but his claim is really one for reformation, saying that there was a mutual mistake on the part of the parties to the administrative deed, and therefore it should be reformed. And that in that case, the deed is voidable and not void. And so then the statute of limitations, general rule that the statute of limitations does not apply to a suit to quiet title, doesn't apply. I wanted to go over just a couple of other things. Briefly, I think that it's very important to point out that Mr. Pogue failed to challenge or assign any error to Ms. Flory's motion for no evidence summary judgment. And I think that that's a dispositive point. Cases have held that essentially where you don't assign error to a no evidence motion for summary judgment, then the judgment can be affirmed, or really says must be affirmed, as to the no evidence motion for summary judgment, whether or not the judgment was rendered properly or improperly. I also wanted to get in briefly into our attorney's fees, if y'all don't have any other questions on the motion for summary judgment. We believe that the court abused its discretion in refusing to award Flores her attorney's fees. And although an abuse of discretion standard is a high one. Based on the court's actual findings in the final judgment, we believe that the court abused its discretion. If you look at the final judgment, the court says in the second sentence, the court, having considered said motions, plaintiff's responses thereto, is of the opinion that defendant's motions should in all things be granted. Flory's requested attorney's fees in her motion for summary judgment and in her supplemental motion for summary judgment. And so by this language, should in all things be granted, you would think that he had granted attorney's fees. In the next paragraph, he goes through and says that after a subsequent evidentiary hearing, he finds that the fees set forth are reasonable, just, and necessarily incurred in the defense of the lawsuit. However, the court finds the defendant's pleadings do not support an award of attorney's fees, and that had there been a counterclaim for declaratory judgment, or if it were appropriate to award attorney's fees, the court would award said attorney's fees. And we believe that the court abused its discretion in two different ways in that sentence. First, that the defendant's pleadings did not support an award of attorney's fees. The Declaratory Judgment Act is very specific in saying that if the plaintiff asserts a Declaratory Judgment Act claim, then either party can be awarded in the discretion of the court attorney's fees. And Mr. Pogue did assert a Declaratory Judgment Act claim in both his original and First Amendment petitions. We then requested attorney's fees under the same Declaratory Judgment Act in our answer, and then we also requested those attorney's fees in our motion for summary judgment. Therefore, we do believe that the pleadings did support an award for attorney's fees. All we had to do was request them, and all he had to do was assert them. We believe we had both here. As far as the court's statement, had there been a counterclaim for declaratory judgment, he would have awarded attorney's fees. We didn't need a counterclaim. All we had to do was request attorney's fees. We did. In fact, cases have said that a mirror image counterclaim for declaratory judgment purely to get attorney's fees is actually improper. So that would have been improper to seek a counterclaim for declaratory judgment just to get attorney's fees. So we believe that based on these findings, the court did abuse its discretion in not awarding attorney's fees. And the court did say that if it were appropriate to award attorney's fees, that it would have done so. I think that the court was just under a misunderstanding of the law and perhaps the pleadings, but abused its discretion in refusing to do so under those actual findings.
So your position is just that you think the trial court mistakenly believed or forgot or whatever that you had to be a movement in order to get attorney's fees under the Declaratory Judgment Act.
Exactly. I don't know if the court wants me to get into, but I thought I would briefly talk about the amended motion for a new trial that Mr. Pogue filed. We objected to the motion under Rule 121 as not being within 3 days of the hearing. But beyond that, we don't think that the trial court abused its discretion in denying the motion because Mr. Pogue failed to meet any of the requirements in 270. The evidence that he attached to his motion was evidence that he'd had for some of it almost a year prior to the hearing. It was not newly discovered evidence. He certainly wasn't diligent in providing that evidence to the court, and we don't believe that he should have been given a second bite at the apple to show that evidence to the court. And even if he was diligent in providing that evidence, he certainly wasn't. The evidence was certainly not decisive. Pogue says that the evidence was decisive on limitations, and actually the deposition testimony said that he'd never actually even reviewed the title policy when he received it. He didn't think he had even checked the title, and his affidavit is not decisive because it doesn't even say that he'd ever reviewed the title policy, so I don't see that as being decisive. But as far as the chain of title and authority, none of the evidence that he submitted in the motion had anything to do with Ms. Flory's chain of title to the mineral estate. I think, again, that his own testimony and his own affidavit couldn't have any bearing on Ms. Flory's title. Again, I think that the property or the mineral estate automatically went to Ms. Flory's. And even if it didn't, like I said again, it didn't go to Mr. Pogue. And that's pretty clear based on all of the documents that were filed with the court and filed with the deed records. If the court has any other questions?
Thank you, Ms. Bush. Mr. Marsden, rebuttal.
Thank you. I want to address a few issues that were brought up, one of which is that these minerals stayed with the estate and pursuant to that final order somehow or another got into Ms. Flores' name. I go back to, how would anybody know? If you go do a deed search and oil and gas companies do title opinions all the time, how are they going to find it? It's just going to show up in B.R. Flores' name.
Well, how do you address her argument whether or not she got them? How did you get them?
Well,
you can't take any more than Anson took.
My response to that is I understand that, and maybe if she doesn't have them, maybe Pogue doesn't either. Maybe they're still in the estate, and maybe if they're still in the estate, then all these $16 million in creditors would love to go back and have the minerals of 218 acres. That's a lot of money, as we know.
How does you get them then?
Well,
where do you come into that picture?
Well, we get them because it was the understanding of Mr. Ferguson. He testified to this, that he negotiated with the estate to purchase these assets. And he assumed that he was getting everything.
He assumed, despite the fact that he'd already bought lots before that were surface only, and these were lots from the same development?
Ferguson had not bought previous lots. Mr. Pogue has.
Right.
And okay. Mr. Pogue bought these lots back when Mr. Flores was still alive. And I go back to my previous statement that, when you have $16 million in debt and $500,000 in assets, you're not in a position to retain assets. You're required to sell the assets of the estate to satisfy these debts
the
best you can.
But that's not really your argument to make, is it? Doesn't that belong to the creditors who aren't really before us?
Well, Anson Financial was a creditor of the estate. He had a judgment of over $1 million. And as he testified, he was getting these properties to help satisfy his debt because he wanted to go and sell these properties in hopes of getting cash, more than he paid for them, to go towards his $1 million debt. And one of the things that, and then Pogue purchased the lots from Anson Financial. So they were in a position, it was their understanding, their assumption after reviewing all of the probate documents and discussions with everybody, that they were getting everything. And to now come back 10 years later and say, no, we didn't sell you everything. We sold you everything but really what had any value, which was the minerals. And we're going to keep
but
those.
But really, they never said they sold you everything. It's just Anson Financial and Mr. Pogue didn't realize possibly that they didn't sell everything. But I don't see anywhere where there was any kind of representations that they were selling everything.
Well, if you look at, representation circumstantially, looking at the probate documents that never mentioned that the minerals were severed, Ferguson's testimony that that he thought was under the assumption that he negotiated a deal where he was getting everything that was left in the estate.
Well, how do you get around the language? Surface estate only.
Well, it was just a mistake. That in prior dealings before and sales before
well,
he died.
What I'm saying is, how could he think he's getting the mineral estate when it says surface estate only?
Well,
if he thought it was a mistake, then he had a duty to investigate.
Unfortunately, I think his testimony was that he didn't look at the administrator's deed closely enough because in his testimony, he had had a lot of trouble with the estate and withholding information, withholding assets and so forth and so on, and withholding documentation. And he was ready to be done with them. And this was the last thing that he had to do with them. And so when the deal transaction closed and he flipped it to Pogue, he didn't take the time to look at the administrator's deed.
I don't think anybody did.
Yes, sir.
Does your client have a claim based on any document in the chain of title, in Mr. Pogue's chain of title? Does he have a claim on any source other than this administrator's deed? In other words, this administrator's deed forms the basis of the transfer to your predecessor in title.
Correct.
And so the language in the administrator's deed is in the chain of title for Mr. Pogue.
That is correct.
Was there any attack in the trial court that the language on the document that you gave us is part of your appendix at Exhibit 7, which is on page... It's plaintiff's Exhibit K.
Yes.
That's the administrator's deed we're talking about, isn't it?
Correct.
And when you come to the fourth page, which on the title record is volume 12397 at page 1236. Do you see that page?
I do.
It says at the top of that page, surface estate only in. Did I read that correctly?
You did.
And was there any attack in your lower court proceeding in the summary judgment, in this summary judgment case, that language was not sufficient to reserve the mineral estate?
No, Judge, there was not.
All right. Thank you, sir.
My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Martson, Ms. Bush, thank you very much for your arguments here today. They've been very helpful to the court, and your case is submitted. You may be excused, and we will call the next case after counsel gets situated.